This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released October 14th, 2018. Episode 411. An interview with Chris Denny. Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
And I'm Chris Denny from Worthington Assembly.
Welcome, Chris. How are you doing?
I am great. How about yourself?
Good. I feel like I want to say that again. How are you doing? Not how are you doing? You know, I feel like I kind of mushed my words together there. But yeah, it's good to talk to you. I mean, we've talked a bunch on email over the years. But, you know, it's good to talk to you in person, and I'm sure we'll actually meet each other's paths
At events and stuff. And, oh, you were there? Yeah, I was there. I didn't see you.
Right. Yeah, that's how it goes in the industry. Yeah. So you are the CTO of Worthington Assembly.
Yeah, that's a made-up title, but we'll use it.
Oh, is it really?
Oh, yeah. When they hired me, it was like, well, what should your title be? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Call me CTO. That way there, if vendors want to know what I'm doing, they can just assume
right,
I'm important.
Right. I'm like an important, but like a nerd, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got it.
Okay. So like, what is your story there? Maybe even further back, what is your background and how did you get into this life?
Oh, I fell into it. I was working at, you know, as a teenager, working at like grocery stores and working for my dad and doing different sorts of things. But then, just always loved electronics, always loved computers and things like that. And I had a family friend who owned a electronics manufacturing, contract manufacturer, and seemed kind of cool. And I applied and they were hiring even kids who didn't know anything, which I was very appreciative of. I just loved it. Enjoyed the work, enjoyed working with machines, liked the people I worked with, and stuck around throughout college, worked my way through college there. And then after college, after I graduated, I wanted to move to New England and be near family, and was looking for a job. And the manufacturer of a piece of equipment I was using at that shop was hiring. They were young at the time. They're called Yes Tech. They make AOI equipment. And I was emailing the guy for tech support, and I'm like, you know, crazy question. You guys hiring?
Hey, it's always good to ask. You're not going to get the job if you don't ask, right?
Yeah, totally. He's like, as a matter of fact, I have to be in New Jersey tomorrow. Can you meet me at the airport? And met up at the airport.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was super
cool.
Wow.
Okay, so the first CM you worked for was not Worthington, you're saying?
Oh, no. Oh, sorry, I should have said that. No, I was working in New Jersey at a company called ACI AppliCAD. Great company. Huge respect to those guys. But anyway, I met him and got the job and traveled all over the country. Got to visit all kinds of people.
Can you meet me at the airport?
People. Yeah.
That is a hell of a line. That's just all right. Who needs
fantastic.
HR? You know, like, screw that. Oh. You know?
Well, at the time, he was like the first or second employee of the company. And I was within the top five hires. Everybody else who worked at the company, they were in some way investors. You know, maybe one guy put in the $1 million and everybody else put in their 10 grand or something. But I think I was like the 10th or 11th employee, if you include all the owners. And it was super cool. I mean, it was such an awesome job. It's like, if anybody's curious about having like a fun job and has the time and has the resources in their life, not resources, but like, you know, doesn't have kids that they have to be home for. Yeah. Flexibility, right, you know, like, especially if you're single, it's such a cool job. Cause you get like, as an applications engineer for honestly for anybody, but especially for equipment, you get to travel all over the world and just, you get to see so many cool things. You get to work on so many cool things.
You get to be in customer facilities at midnight while they're still yelling at you and down your neck.
Yes. Yeah. That
but
is
you learn stress,
not so fun.
Stress control, I'm sure, from that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? I still had a lot to learn, but you totally learn how to like just manage yourself very well under pressure, because like, I almost wonder if you work in the same environment all the time and like you get under pressure and you're comfortable with the people around, you could totally just like snap and freak out and be like, no, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, and get all upset. But like when you're at a customer and you're the representative for this organization and they're, you know, you don't know these people and you want to be polite and respectful, you learn self-control real quick.
Oh, you're saying just because of that, like that, because they're like strangers in the first place, right?
Yeah, totally. Exactly. You're just
more of the social niceties than a workplace might afford.
Exactly. And exactly. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is how human beings are supposed to respect each other. Great. I will remember this life skill. Yeah. So but that was a great job. I loved it, but I was newly married and adored my wife and was really sad not to be with her all the time. So, got a job.
That's the flip side to travel is the being away. You
know? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I got a job at another local CM here in New England that did not work out. They shall go unnamed because, that was a horrible experience. But, I worked there for just a couple years a couple months. And then I got a cool job as a manufacturer's representative. I don't know if a lot of your listeners would be familiar with kind of like what they do, or if you're familiar with what those guys do.
Yeah, I think that's so. John's going to kill me if I get this wrong, but John Davis, who we've had on the show, I believe is a manufacturer rep.
Oh, beautiful.
And he does it for like machine building and things like that. It, definitely in the industrial space. But so if I could take a guess at it, it's when you have multiple manufacturers you're representing, and basically you show up with a line card and you say, I can help you with all these things. And then as it's kind of like quasi sales, but also kind of quasi support, right?
Yes. Oh, you hit the nail on the head, especially, you know, it is the best reps are quasi support. And those are, you know, you got to be technically astute. You got to know what you're talking about. But yeah, so you're independent. A lot of times these guys own their own companies. Sometimes they get a little bit larger and they hire people, and I'm one of the people that they hired. So I covered, parts of New England and sold equipment, and that was super cool. You know,
what kind of, was it industrial as well, or
it was
kind of
all
stuff?
Related to circuit board assembly, right? So it was it was like stencil printers and pick and place, reflow, wave solder, AOI, conveyors, solder.
Right. So you basically, someone could phone you up and be like, hey, I want to start a, you know, assembly house. And you'd be like, boy, can I help you?
Yeah, well, I would probably, even if it was 2 a.m, I would get in my car and go see them.
You'd
immediately
start drooling because you show up covered in drool, right?
Because nobody starts an assembly house anymore. it's all existing. Maybe in certain areas of the country, but not in New England. It was super, which brings me to Worthington Assembly. It was super stagnant. It was a really tough time. It was 2008, 2009, 2010. Just not a lot going on, tough to sell anything. I didn't have any skin in the game. So I didn't really have a huge reason to stay. And I could just sort of see the writing on the wall, especially with how many resources you can put on the internet. And it's like, okay, how much value am I really providing here? Like I remember I got a sale for, you know, we sold like $1 million worth of, some pick and place gear, and I got like a really nice check. And I just remember thinking, I like didn't work for that at all.
why didn't they just order it? Like, this is silly.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I didn't, like, I just showed up, and you know, the manufacturer and their sales team did all the work, and they did all the quoting, and they did, you know, they worked out all the logistics of delivery. And I just kept thinking, like, what the heck am I doing? Like, how is this sustainable? There's no way I can survive doing this, because there's no true raw value to what it is that I'm doing here. It just felt very, I don't know. I was a little uncomfortable.
Well, that's
with that,
interesting,
right?
To me though. Like, I always think that the manufacturer rep though, they kind of maintain relationships as well. So like when someone does need a piece of equipment that they at least know who to call. I mean,
yes,
I guess
for sure
they could go and fill out a form on a web somewhere and
the crazy thing is, I don't think it's self-bias. It could be self-bias, but that's what I do now. It's like, okay, I want a 3D AOI. I'm going to Google 3D AOI and see who comes up. Now, because of my background, I'm familiar with most of the 3D AOI companies. But regardless, it's like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And a lot of times I'll like reach out to Ko Young, and then I'll be like, you know, like, oh, that you're my rep for that? I didn't even know you repped them. You know, sometimes right, you feel right, bad. Right. You don't even realize they're line cards, but yeah, that kind of stuff happens.
Yeah. Right.
But the best reps do actually provide some pretty good value. So like we work with some folks, these guys, you know, they really know their stuff and they really help you. Like, especially when you're in a jam, like you're dealing with some kind of like, oh, we got this crazy chip scale package that's 0.35 millimeter pitch. And how the heck do I process this? You know, and the best reps will be able to like, hey, you know, I don't know, but I know who does know. And I'll put you in touch with them. You know what I mean? So they can be a good liaison to get you connected with people that can get you answers and stuff. So yeah, providing that connection is important.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And it's like, I mean, from the other side, from the sales perspective, it seems like the companies are paying that premium to have you as a sales, you know, like whatever the margin you get as the salesperson or as the rep person, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean,
they want to know exactly when you're there.
Yeah, so. Their national sales manager might be in Chicago and it's like, hey, I'd really like to talk about this machine. And they're like, oh, I can get to you in July.
So you're saying that the sales model didn't make sense to you. But then how did that end up translating to Worthington? You were already at Worthington and you're like, sales is like not a thing, or that's why you're getting out of sales?
I was trying to sell to Worthington, but they weren't buying anything, which... Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not sure what that says, but yeah, but they were great guys. The owners of mm-hmm. Worthington Assembly are Neil and Rafal, and I just love visiting them. And they were always just honest and fair. And you know, when they didn't buy something, they would actually tell me why, which was pretty cool. Most people don't do that, and yeah. So for a number of other,
wait, should you tell salespeople why you didn't buy?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Well, you should.
Nah, that's like a kindness for them, but I don't think it's a mandatory, is it?
So here's my opinion on that. So like it's not a mandatory, absolutely not. But my opinion is, and the reason I continue to do it this day, like when I don't buy somebody's equipment and I buy somebody else's equipment, I go, here are the reasons why we decided to buy X, Y, and Z. They have this, this, and this, and you don't. And I value these things. And you do have this, which I'm disappointed I'm not going to get, but I don't value that as much as this other thing. And I don't know. I think it builds the ecosystem a little bit more, because then they're getting this feedback like, hey, we lost the sale because this customer is telling us that we don't have these things. Should we be looking into getting these things? Should we be throwing our engineers at this kind of a thing? I don't know. I think it just kind of enhances everything, yeah. You know?
And that's true. And then I guess the rep then also keeps an eye out for you. If they do see it, totally. Then they're like, oh, well, Chris really cares about ABC. Who knows what it is, but
totally.
A good salesperson will definitely keep that in mind.
A good salesperson. That's the key, right? So there's some salespeople we may not necessarily say why we didn't buy their equipment, because we know it's just going to fall on deaf ears and they're just going to be upset they lost the sale.
Right.
But you know,
yeah, some of them are just at the end of their quarter, right? Some of them are.
Oh my God. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, and I hated all that. That's an interesting one too. I hated
especially with capital equipment. I'm sure that's a different thing than like for me, it was always salespeople were like, I want to get the design win. I want to win the socket they always talked about. But for capital equipment like that, I mean, first off, it's like you said, $1 million is not uncommon. And
yeah, that's very common.
It's like a big deal. Like, what is the sales cycle time for that kind of thing?
All right. So let's say you are like, let me put it this way. So like we went through that at Worthington Assembly and we had a quad pick and place equipment, which is super old and just, yeah. Don't, if you're interested in buying pick and place equipment, don't buy quad anyway. So,
oh man, right there, you're going to get some hate mail.
Oh, I'm going to get it. Yep. But as with everything, it all depends on what you're doing. So we actually have a shop not far from here who's an OEM, and it's perfect for them. Absolutely perfect, you know? So it always depends on what your goal is and for what our goals were, it didn't line up. But anyway, so like I think we spent probably close to a year trying to figure out what equipment we were going to get. And so you're spending a lot of time with these salespeople. And so these salespeople have given you, you know, 10 plus hours of their time. Some of them much more, especially if they're traveling.
Sometimes lunch.
Yeah, I am not opposed to a ham sandwich here and there, but
shouldn't make any $1 million decisions based on it. But
oh my God, I got a funny story actually. So this reminds me of something. So when I was a rep, we always had our trade shows, our big trade show, Apex in Las Vegas. And we had this one potential customer. I can't remember the name of his company. It's probably good that I don't remember the name of his company. But anyway, he...
from the story type that I'm guessing is coming. Yeah, I'm guessing it's good. Give him names.
Yeah, exactly. So he, you know, he's shopping for new pick and place and his shop is big, right? He's going to buy... That guy is going to swing a lot of lumber once he makes a decision. So...
That's a baseball reference for all of you nerds out there like myself.
So we, I'm so glad you got the reference. So, yeah, so we were like, hey, let's take you out to dinner. Now it's Las Vegas, right? And have you ever been to Vegas?
Unfortunately, yes.
All right. Yeah.
I'm out there for DEF CON every year. Yeah.
All right. So not an awesome town, but a town, you can have a lot of fun in and you can eat some great food and you can eat some expensive food. You can
spend a lot
food.
Of money.
You can spend so much money. So we take him out to dinner. And at the time, I was representing Panasonic, and Panasonic had money to spend, especially for a potential customer like him. And they wanted to take him to this restaurant that was, you know, what do they call it? A la carte, right? It's you order your steak and your side.
The steak is $120 by itself. That's
yes,
right.
Yeah. Exactly. Kobe beef from Japan, flown in that morning. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, so the meal alone probably would have been expensive. But anyway, he's like, I want to get some wine. We're like, yeah, of course. Got to have some wine, right? So he orders a bottle of wine. First bottle of wine, $250. We're like, ooh, okay. $250 bottle of wine.
Warmed up.
Yep. Yeah. Next bottle of wine, $500. Like, really? Really? You're going to be there?
He's just messing with you at that
point.
Oh,
God. You know, and so then we had a great dinner. It was like $2,000 for like six people.
Good Lord.
Yeah, well, you buy $750 worth of wine. So, and that wasn't it. You know, it was there was more bottles after that, but those are the two Opus One bottles that stood out that night. So the next night, he's there with Samsung, and the next night he's there with Fuji, and the next night he's there with Siemens. Oh, he's just playing everybody. The guy's getting $1,000 meal every night. He's drinking $1,000 worth of wine every night. Oh my God!
I mean, that's yeah, that's not great.
So yeah, so you get that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But that was kind of the fun side of being a sales rep, because then you get these big companies like Panasonic who are buying you $1,000 worth of wine. So
sure.
Yeah. I didn't complain about it.
I mean, what is the scale of like those kind of sales too? Like what was the scale of those?
So the initial sale would easily have been $1 million, probably $1.5 million for that initial sale. But then
it's all the feeders, all the add-ons,
well,
nickels and dimes.
Yeah. So the feeders, including the feeders and the software, probably $1.5 million. But then over the period of time, that would have been easily $1 million per year account. So you're looking
that's interesting.
Yeah. Right. You're looking at literally doing, you know, just showing up once a month and, you know, buying some people some donuts and collecting a, you know, $50,000 check a year from that. You know what I mean? So you you don't screw around with that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, sales, that like I said, capital expense stuff too. It's just like, that is big money.
It's
and that's
big
moving.
Money.
Yeah.
It's big money. Crazy. I absolutely love it. I really do love it. I do miss being a rep. Like, I really enjoyed being a rep. I would probably be willing to go back to being a rep if I felt that it was really there, you know what I mean? But my heart's just not in it. Like, I just don't see that sales model working.
The value you would provide.
Yeah. It just, I always felt uncomfortable with it. Like, how can I justify collecting a $50,000 check a year for doing, you know, just buying a couple of cases of donuts every now and then, you know what I mean? Just felt so gross. Yep. Just felt gross. I prefer to work
all the way to the bank.
Yeah, exactly. I prefer to work like ridiculously hard and get paid reasonably well for it.
Yeah, that is the engineer's motto right there.
Yeah, exactly.
So then how did this transition? So you found Worthington because you were trying to sell to them.
Yeah.
And then you show up and you're like, hey, I'd like to nerdify your process. Is that kind of the...
It's so true. That's so true. So it was like they wanted to go from where they were to something significantly different, right? And so when Neil and Rafal bought Worthington Assembly, Worthington Assembly was founded in like the 70s, 70, 76 or 77. I can't remember exactly. It's actually a really funny story. It was founded by a husband and wife who they were living on a hippie commune, basically growing growing apples. You can't see my air quotes, but you can hear my air quotes.
Right, right. Some kind of
yeah,
crop.
Yes,
so cash crop. Yeah, like
exactly.
Apples.
Yeah,
yes.
You grow apples, yeah. So that you can provide. Right. So anyway, they they had a friend who moved out, and he started he was working at a medical device company. He's like, hey, I need these circuit boards built. And the owners were like, well, you know, the people who went on to own Worthington Assembly are like, we don't know how to build circuit boards. He's like, nah, it's fine. Here's a soldering iron. You'll figure it out.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Man.
And this is,
I always like marvel when some companies are just founded on like that. What could possibly go wrong? And then everything goes wrong, but
yes.
Still at the end there's a company.
Totally.
This is like, oh,
totally.
Wow,
so they named the company Moronics. Because they were a couple of morons and they were making circuit
no.
boards.
No.
Absolutely.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Like
spell
I said,
it for me. Moronics.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, they were growing apples.
Jesus.
So they started.
Can you imagine calling up and being like, yes, I needed to do a reorder of solder, please?
So
and
sure.
Like, oh, yeah. What's the company name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Moronics.
Moronics. Yep. So shortly after that, they realized they should change it to something more professional, and they named it after the town they were in Worthington. So they named it Worthington yeah. Assembly. And, you know, it was just an awesome, cool little mom and pop shop with just local family friends and people in town. And, hey, this is a circuit board, and this is a soldering iron, and here's how you put this stuff together. So
job creators.
Oh, yeah. It was super cool. Yeah, it's just
that's great.
An awesome, awesome couple, Tom and Barb, just – can't say enough good things yeah. about them. They wanted to retire. They wanted to volunteer. And they do volunteer. They do so much stuff for the local community. They're super cool. And the guys I work for now, they were outsourcing to Worthington Assembly where they were. And overheard that the owners were interested in selling. And they're like, hey, yeah, let's talk. So they bought the company.
Nice.
I simplified that. Greatly, but
yeah, no, and that's the other details are more a business podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they bought the company and ran it for a few years through the really hard times, you know, like 2006, 2007, 2008, all those
oh,
tough
man.
Years.
Yeah.
And yeah. They did pretty well. So
that's great.
What they were interested in doing though is kind of bringing it to, you know, the 21st century, so to speak. And we met each other at a trade show and stayed connected, and they knew I had a lot of experience in equipment and process and technology. And eventually I agreed, and it worked for myself, worked for my wife, and it was great. And it's been so much fun. Really, honestly, has been a lot of fun.
Kind of awesome.
Taking it from where it was to where it is today. And we have just had a blast, an absolute blast doing it.
So I want to hear the specifics about Worthington eventually, but I'd actually like to get a commentary because you've seen across the industry too.
Mm-hmm.
What is the state of assembly houses in the US right now? I mean,
I could have given you a really good answer 7 years ago before I worked for Worthington Assembly because I was in them all the time.
I mean, that's okay. I mean, you could start there. I mean, yeah. I'm sure you have a feel for it now, and you're obviously in it. So you see the other sides of it.
Yeah.
And I'd be interested in that too. But like my sight on all this stuff, it's just that they're there, but they're not advertising as that much.
No.
And when they are, it's for big jobs to try and get, because like that's what actually pays the bills.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I would agree with that. It's, you know, we always say around here, like you want, a lot of these shops, they're looking for two or three big accounts, you know, that is 80% of their business, and they just keep those people happy, and whatever floats in on top is great. You know, and they're maintaining their 50 employees or whatever it is, and they're just, you know, living the good
life.
They're
cranking boards.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, right?
Cranking
that's
boards?
The thing
what do you
I
mean
think,
by cranking boards exactly? Like just churning
like
out lots of boards?
90% utilization and not a lot of line changes and that kind of thing.
My
Is that?
God, no, not at all.
Oh, okay. Then I thought that was, so that's good. That's my misconception.
Now
here.
Maybe.
So what is it actually like then?
Maybe automotive, right? So like maybe if you've got some automotive suppliers, they might be doing that kind of stuff, but no way. It is all, it, at least from my experience and what I've seen, it's short run stuff. It's, you know, so even though you do have those two or three cush accounts, they are, you know, they may have 100 bombs. And so you're constantly, you know, like, yeah, we need 50 of these next week and we need 25 of those. And you're just kind of keeping them afloat. You're never building 25,000 of anything, you know.
So when you say the two or three accounts, you're saying that those aren't necessarily the only accounts that are running 80% of the time. You're saying that that's funding the company.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Okay. So I took that to mean 80% of the time they're running those machines. They're running their machines on those.
Oh no! I just meant like if they're making $10 million a year, $8 million of it is coming from three customers.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so they might only be running a month out of the year, but they still might be making enough money to cover costs or whatever it is.
Yeah. If you're talking line utilization, you might be right. It might only be, you know, 1 month's worth of however long that equipment could actually run. Yeah, totally. You're not far off the mark.
So why is it like that? So maybe I don't. I should probably give my background here because it's pretty lame. So I was at Keithley and they had on-site CMs. The CM did all their vertically integrated. That was great until they stopped doing that when they got bought, and that's when I left because I was doing manufacturing stuff. I didn't want to do outside of that. Mm-hmm, And then ABB did outsourced. And then I didn't work for hardware companies anymore.
Okay.
And so then my own stuff, you know, like I've done some short run stuff, but nothing, you know, nothing super huge. So, yeah, I mean,
yeah,
CMs. I guess kind of foreign to me.
Yeah. So I can give you an example of like where Worthington Assembly was before, a few years ago. It was really like two or three really good customers. And you were working on those two or three customers' products pretty much 80% of the time. But it was never like big volumes, right? It's always like, you know, 15 of those and 50 of these. And maybe, you know, you get a 200 piece order. Oh my God, how are we going to handle a 200 piece order? You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're a very different company today, but that was kind of how it was. And honestly, so when I was a rep and when I was selling equipment and stuff, it was super common to go into shops and just like never see anything run. Like
really?
Oh yeah.
That's really
interesting. I would go in there and I would walk away going, how do they survive? How are they making any money?
Right. How are those lights on?
Yeah, seriously.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, you roll up and there's a BMW in the parking lot and you're like, what equipment is running to pay for that BMW?
Well, that's they threw that in with the huge purchase of the pick and place, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, it was so strange. I would leave places all the time and go, man, I don't understand. And by contrast, I would go to places and they'd be humming. Right. And I would never see anybody. I'd see like one guy and everybody else was working their tail off. You know, they were all stuck in corners and they were doing stuff. And it was like, oh, man, like these guys actually have stuff moving. You know what I mean? Like they know what they're doing. And it was awesome to see like the good, the bad.
So what was the difference between them, though?
So just really thoughtful sort of a really thoughtful process with everything that they did, right? So like, rather than just like, boom, here's a new machine. All right, guys, figure it out. You know, they would like, all right, if we're going to buy this machine, how are we going to use it? Like, and how are we going to put it in our floor? And how are we going to feed the machine? How are we going to unload the machine? You know, like, so they wouldn't just buy a machine, but they would buy all the automation around the machine. Because you would go to shops, I've probably literally been to 100 different CMs and OEMs in my career, and at least 100. And I would say I have seen maybe 15, maybe 20 of those companies had something besides a table or a cardboard ramp catching circuit boards out of the reflow oven.
Oh wow!
Right,
you or like a person who's going
or a person.
Ooh, hot! Yeah. Ooh, hot!
Yeah, exactly. No joke. Absolutely. And And it was like it blew my mind. I remember the first time I actually saw something catching boards out of the reflow oven. I was like, oh, that's
what
cool.
Is that?
Yeah, like I was like, that's really smart. Yeah, exactly. And and then I remember going to this one shop in Connecticut, and like I just every time I went there, machines were running and nobody was in front of them, right? Nobody was near the machine, and the machines were just running.
And you're saying this is a good thing,
yeah?
Right?
Oh yeah. Because machines aren't expensive; people are expensive, right? And
that's right. Yep.
And I just remember always being blown away, like, okay, these guys know what they're doing. And I would just, you know, I love to spend time there to just kind of see how they did stuff. And they were just smart about, like, yeah, we're gonna load this machine with our 15 boards. It doesn't have to be 5,000, right? We're gonna have a buffer before this machine with 15 boards. And we're gonna have an unloader for this machine that can hold those 15 boards. And we're gonna hit go and we're gonna walk away. You know, and it was like,
right.
Oh,
come back after a sandwich.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It was like, oh, that's how you do things. You know what I mean? And then you go to another shop and they had conveyors loading and unloading the machines, and people were walking around doing other more value added stuff, and the machines were working away. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's how you do stuff. And I would go to so many shops, and you would just see people manually doing everything, manually loading and unloading machines constantly. And it just sort of was like, I don't get it. Why?
Job creators, yeah. Chris, come on, man.
There's better jobs than that, man. There's better jobs than that.
I know. Well, that is the argument for automation in the first place.
Totally.
I think,
I'm a firm believer in please, robots, take my job. I'm a firm believer.
That's right.
So
the way you were talking about it, though, is the way it sounds to me is that utilization. In my experience, it was utilization is more of a sales issue and more of a scheduling issue than it is just a equipment piece. Is that another bad assumption on my part?
No, that can definitely be true. I mean, sales are, you know, for most companies, sales are your bottleneck, right? You're always hurting for more business. And scheduling too. Like, you know, you can't start building something unless you have all the parts and you have the stencil and you have the circuit boards, right?
Exactly, right. Yeah, you need 100% of the parts usually. Not always, but you in a best case scenario, you have 100% of the parts and they're all being placed at the same time.
That's
and
right.
So if DigiKey is backordered on a resistor, it's like, well,
that's
wait
right.
until that resistor gets here.
You got it. Yeah, totally.
Otherwise, you have expensive, meat-based life forms doing the... Yeah.
We like to call those people, Chris. That's we call them our people,
yes.
Our team members.
I'm regularly eating human food, and I am a human myself. So
yeah, but totally. Like yeah. So you've got to work. Like the office is a really important part of that whole thing, like scheduling, making sure everything's coming in and you know, we're going to be able to build all this stuff on time, making sure your suppliers ship when they say they're going to ship, because believe it or not, not every supplier does. And, it can be tough. Like, when I say supplier, I don't mean like, you know, Joe Schmo's wire shop. I mean like your DigiKeys and your Arrows and your Avnets, you know, like, hey, remember when I ordered this 3 days ago? Why hasn't it shipped? Oh yeah, he was on vacation, so normally he processes your order, right. And it's like, what? But you're a multi-billion-dollar company. What do you mean he's on vacation?
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. The meat controllers again,
that's
man.
It.
You know, people in the loop. That's never a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And which is why, I know you have certain sponsorships, but I will give a shout out to DigiKey as being an incredibly efficient and just like mind blowing company. But
we love them all, but I have
a special place in my heart for DigiKey. We went to visit them a couple years ago.
Oh yeah. Wow. Thief River Falls.
Yes.
Right?
And middle of nowhere. I've never felt so claustrophobic in my life from the expanse of nothing. And then Thief River Falls,
man.
And then nothing.
You get that too? Like I get actually from the nothingness.
Yes,
not
that's
so
what I'm
the,
that's exactly yeah. what I'm talking about. So
it's like creepy,
yeah,
isn't
totally.
It? It's like I just imagine myself running across an empty field and never moving.
Exactly. Totally.
You know?
So, but no, what is a beautiful town, awesome little town. And we got a chance to talk to some folks and they were saying, yeah, like, I forget who it was, if it was like Panasonic or Xilinx or somebody, or you know what I think? I think it might have been like Microchip or somebody like that. They DigiKey killed their numbers, right? And so they're like, hey, we want to buy the sales team some pizza, you know, just to thank them. And the ownership, or the leadership I should say, was like, they're like, yeah, great, but you got to buy everybody else pizza. And there's hundreds of employees.
That's a lot of pizza.
There's lots of pizza.
Yeah,
and you're
right.
In Thief River. right? So it's not like you can pull from, it's not like you're in Manhattan and you can pull from like 20 different pizza shops. So Pizza Hut had to shut down for like 3 days to prepare.
Oh my God.
I don't know if it was 3 days. That's fantastic. I could be exaggerating, but I think.
But whatever it is, that's enough to make a story.
Totally. It was like awesome. A legit, like a full day. Pizza Hut just like accepted no orders so that they could deliver everything to.
That's so much cheese.
Totally. So they, but that, yeah. I, you know, that's a cool thing that, you know, wow, that's what a cool company that they would be like, yeah, sales team killed it, but everybody else benefits from it. Because at the end of the day, why did the sales team kill it? Well, it's because everybody else made sure the stuff shipped. You know what I mean? And they, built that reputation that everything else shipped. And just, man, that, awesome. That place, oh my God, they basically built a conveyor, like a massive, massive conveyor, like rectangular shaped conveyor. And then they built a building around it. That's DigiKey.
Nice.
It's unbelievable. Nice. Like it,
oh, and more buildings I hear too.
They're building, huge expansion, which, but they, it's unbelievable. It was what a cool tour. It was such a cool tour. But yeah, so making sure you
you okay?
Yeah.
Come back down, Chris. Yeah. We're down here. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. We want to talk about your company.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk about your company.
Yeah. We're pretty boring compared to DigiKey. Plus me. Trust me.
Oh.
So we...
Just for now. You work up to that.
So I think we're pretty cool. I think we're pretty cool, but DigiKey is real cool. So, but yeah, so we were saying the importance of suppliers.
The state of... Well, yeah, that, and I think just more generally, like the, I'm trying to just get a feel for CMs in general, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of framing the state of the world as it was, and, you know, and things are always changing in all those states. So I think it's interesting to hear, maybe if you can give a quick picture of what Worthington was like when you got there.
Yeah. So,
right? so what was the everyday there?
Right. So the everyday was, there was 11 people, maybe 12. And we had a couple pick and place machines, and we had like a little clamshell reflow oven, and it was a nice reflow oven. Like it was a nice big industrial oven.
But that means that it folds open basically when you need to service
it. Yeah. It wasn't like an inline or service it when you load boards in it. Yeah. Just when you're like loading boards, you load them, like the clamshell opens pneumatically, you put the boards in and you hit a button, the clamshell closes pneumatically. And
So no conveyor.
Conveyor. No. So it was funny. The first year I worked here, they're like, all right, we got to get a reflow oven. And so I just had the utmost confidence in the company I represented and their reflow oven. So I bought that reflow oven. And once it arrived and we got it all hooked up and everything, I looked at Neil and Rafal and I said, all right, guys, this has been an inside job. You guys would never buy anything from me. I figured I had to get hired for you guys to buy a piece of equipment.
Nice.
I'm out of here. No. So, but yeah, so then
I was expecting it was going to like go the other way and like, it just, you're like, oh, this is a piece of crap. Yeah.
No. So it was funny. The true story, the reflow oven that, we have, and probably not many people know this, but it was more or less designed for Apple. With their kind of expectations and demands. And they bought lots of them, lots and lots and lots of them. I know, because I was trying to sell them and I'd get 50 week lead times. I'm like, what do you mean? I can't deliver a machine to my customer for 50 right. weeks. They're like, well, we have a customer who's tied up.
It's just a big pizza oven. Exactly. Come on, man.
Apple comes in. They're like, how many of these can you build a month? And they're like, I don't know, maybe 30. They're like, we'll take 40. You know, that's how they roll.
Yep. Right.
So, but yeah, so we had a couple, like, and then manually loaded, manually unloaded pick and place machines, manually loaded, manually unloaded reflow oven, a manual stencil printer, meaning, you know, holding the squeegee blades with your hand and drawing it across the stencil, you know, aligning it by hand.
Okay. So not repeatable as well, right?
Not repeatable, repeatable as the operator.
Wait, so I missed the part about, you said pick and place, or sorry, the pick and place is also manual. So like you just had like a jig that was set up in there.
No, so it was manually loaded. So you had to, you know, there's no conveyors, there's no automation around the pick and place machine. Right. So he's taking the board and he's plopping the board on the conveyor and then hitting a button and it draws it in and builds it.
I see. So you're just saying between machines. It's still on rails. It's still being pulled in.
You got it. Yeah. So, and then it was just sort of a spaghetti diagram of, okay, then it goes over here and then it goes over here and then it goes over here. And there was no real flow to it. And so the first thing we did is we just redid the floor. We got a good flow, and then we bought some conveyors and we tied things together. And then just, you know, 7 years later, you buy another pick and place, you buy another stencil printer, and you buy another oven, and you buy another selective soldering machine. And you just, you know, you are where we are today, you know, more or less doubling our revenue, keeping headcount, less than double, which is important, right? Cause that means you're more efficient. And still a small shop, but very, 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 very efficient shop.
Could you give us an idea of what, so you said, and I believe that you guys are working towards this, or are already there, but like what it was, what is a best case scenario for a CM? Like what is the best CM in the world look like? Because I think a lot of people, so like, I'm just trying to kind of give a picture for the people that are listening who have never been in or near one as well. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe a best case scenario as well. I mean, I know that we're, you know, 40 plus minutes in now,
sure.
But what is the best CM look like?
A long rectangular building with receiving on one end and shipping on the other and no bends and turns or walls in between.
Right. And parts go in one side.
Exactly. And finished
parts and PCBs.
Finished product comes out the other. And what you, do you want, like, so, you know, okay. So my audience right now is.
Step us through. I mean, like, step us through what are the stages as well.
Because my audience right now is Chris Gamble, who's been to CMs, but I forget that Gamble's audience may not have been to a CM before. Right. So, apologize for assuming too much. So typically what will happen is all the parts come in the door. Somebody in a receiving department kits all those parts so that they're coming from all kinds of different suppliers. They're coming through all different shipments at all different days. And then at the end of the day, they need to put all of those parts into a kit. They need to release that kit to, you know, say, okay, green light, you guys can build this. And so what'll happen is in one section, you'll have an area where they're actually loading these parts onto feeders, which we discussed earlier, right? Feeders are the biggest expense. And they're, those feeders go into a pick and place machine, but you got to get that done ahead of time because the pick and place machine is still running, right? Ideal.
And a feeder as well is basically something that takes the parts off the reel on the components that are on a reel, and then actually advances that reel as well. We should also say that.
This will work great if I describe it and then you be the glossary.
Okay. That's cool.
Perfect.
I call myself the foil or the dumb person, but yes, we can also call me the glossary.
It's perfect. I love it. So, but the pick and place machine's got to be running while you're doing that, right? You don't want to be like stopping your machine so that you can load feeders. That's kind of crazy. Why would you do that, right? So you need to have plenty of feeders so that you can load two or three jobs ahead of time.
Oh, yeah. Right. Right.
And
when they're $500 to $1,000 each, right? Because they're pretty advanced pieces of machinery.
They are their own little machine. A lot of them have computers built into them that are communicating with other computers. Oh, yeah.
I suppose if one jams up, it's worth it to have a computer in there, right? Because if one jams up, you take down the whole machine and then everything
exactly
gets screwed.
Yeah. So a lot of times they may just be sort of the cartridge, right? So like the Nintendo is not complete until you put a cartridge in it. And so the feeder is sort of the same way. The feeder sort of completes it and it says, I've got all the information in here. It may not necessarily have a microchip on it, but it's got something that says, you know, this is what I am and this is what I'm doing. But anyway, so yeah, you're loading all those feeders. And then when you actually are ready to run it, you have a stencil printer, which I think everybody is familiar with the concept of what a stencil is, if they're not necessarily familiar with what an SMT stencil is. But you have a stencil printer that automatically aligns the stencil to the circuit board. So you have all these tiny little fine pitch parts and everything, and you've got to get all your little aperture cuts in your stencil lined up over the copper where you need everything. And so you get your stencil loaded in your stencil printer, you put your circuit board in there, you print the solder paste onto the circuit board. Now you've got, I'm going to run through this really quick. Now you've got solder paste on there. Now paste is a slurry of kind of tacky flux and, powdered metal, powdered solder. And, then that stencil printer feeds a pick and place machine, which uses a vacuum to pick components out of those feeders, out of those reels, and places them onto the paste, and the paste is sticky and tacky, so those parts don't go anywhere. And when it's done with that whole process, it goes into a reflow oven, which melts all that solder in place at a very very, very specific and very tightly controlled rate, so you don't destroy your board. And more importantly, destroy your components. And out the other end comes your assembled circuit board. Now there's always through hole and stuff like that. But so you were asking about like an ideal CM, like what is the pinnacle that we're always trying to achieve? The pinnacle that we're always trying to achieve is that all those processes happen without people having to do anything. Right. So,
So literally the truck shows up and then the truck shows up again and there's no humans.
Yeah. That would be a miracle of innovation, but,
you should do that. You know, if you get that figured out, you know, that would be great. You're a CTO. I'm just saying, Chris.
I think one Mr. Foxconn is probably the closest to that than anybody.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But in the United States where we're not building cell phones, you know, a million a week or whatever, come on, a million a day. Who am I kidding?
A day. Yeah, at least.
And we're doing lower volume stuff. So we just want to keep those machines running as often as possible. And so what you really, really focus on all the time is what can I do off the machine versus what do I have to do on the machine, right? Because if I have to do this on the machine, that means I'm interrupting it from doing its valuable work. So how much of this can I pull off the machine? How much work, how much prep can I do elsewhere while the machine is running? And so you're always focused on that. And then you're always focused on never letting that machine stop running. So what does that mean? It means you've got automation built around that machine to feed and unload that machine, right? So that can be conveyors, that can be magazines, that can be buffers, that can be all kinds of things. But you just want to keep those things flush with stuff all the time. And then you want to have like a rolling changeover. So, you know, you may have, you know, some of the bigger ones, they may have 10 machines in a row. Well, the first machine.
You say that, you mean 10 picking places in a row. Yeah. So you still put the solder paste on once, but then because you have a limited number of cartridges on each picking place, you might have to run for a board that has, 800 components with 100 uniques, you might have to do two or three machines, right?
Were you standing over my shoulder a few minutes earlier? Because that's almost exactly the numbers of the job I was working on.
No, I did not,
Yeah, it's like 105 uniques and like 850 placements or something. So, so what you're trying to do is while those machines are still running, the machines upstream have finished, right? The stencil printer's done. He's already printed all your boards. So now you're trying to change that over while your pick and place machines are still running. So that by the time you're done changing it over, you've already printed your next job and you're changing over your pick and place while the last pick and place is still running and you're building your next job and the machines never stop, right?
It's kind of like a Formula F1 like pit crew kind of thing.
Absolutely, right? We talk about it all the time.
The one person who's just unscrewing the tire. That's all they do.
That's it,
and they do it as best they
can. That's it. You hit the nail on the head. We actually use that illustration all the time. The Formula One pit crew, the NASCAR crew. You got to speak to your audience, right? You know, so. Some guys around here like the NASCAR, some guys like the F1. So.
I was going to say, I don't know how much for either crowd is here, but you know, welcome to all of our motorsport friends.
Absolutely. And if you're into lawnmower racing, I'm sure you have tire changes there too. So, so that's the ideal, but that is the airbrushed, photoshopped, perfect, you know, it's never
well, I mean,
realistic.
In order to do that too, you also needed to have all those parts set up. You also needed to have the next client set up. You also needed to schedule it so everybody's ready to go. And so
you got it.
That is the best case scenario, it seems like.
That is the best case scenario. But that's just one small aspect, right? But this is going to lead me into something else. So that's a factory, right? So that's like the operation. That's the actual physical building of it. But like I said, there's everything all around it, right? So you can be the most efficient company in the world. Like, and so Chris, you can say to me like, hey, I've got, you know, the next Arduino I want to make. How much is it going to cost me to make this? And I'm going to be like, I'd love to tell you. You'll hear from me in 2 weeks.
right, exactly.
And so that's part of efficiency, right? Wouldn't you agree? Like at the end of the day, that's part of your efficiency. Because what you want to know, Chris, what the engineer wants to know is, I finished my design. When can I get boards in my hand? Right? You don't care about.
And also, how few people do I have to talk to? No offense to your former sales salesiness, but
For God's sakes, please don't call us. Like totally. Like if you call us, you're going to catch us in a grumpy mood because we don't want to be on the phone. We want to be like getting stuff done. right?
Well, yeah, you're saying that as Worthington, yeah. But I'm just saying some places are like, no, you have to call us to get set up.
No, don't call us, please.
I'm like, I don't want to.
yeah. Some places they may want to. No, please, for the love of God, just email us. Like, just don't, you know, text us. Just don't email us. Or just don't call us, I should say. Right. But, and that's us. That's Worthington Assembly. But yeah, so you have to be efficient on that end, right? So you've got to be very efficient at quoting, because at the end of the day, how fast your CM is at giving you a price matters to how quickly you're going to get that board, right? Because you don't care about everything in between. You just need your finished circuit board.
Well, and also there's also the, I was, of course, peeking at the, you know, the page for Worthington.
Oh, and I haven't updated that in a while.
You guys say, we make stuff, mostly circuit boards, but also anything that needs to go with that circuit board, which means that from a quoting perspective, that makes it even tougher, because now it's not like, oh, I have 800 placements, 100 are unique, I know how many feeders I need, I know how many parts cost, blah, 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 blah. Now it's like, and there's a cable drawing. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of
good luck with that one.
When you come to us and you say there's a cable drawing, we say, okay, do you need 1,000? Because otherwise we're not interested. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but when it comes to circuit boards, because we're so efficient at it, we're like, yeah, we'll build one. Yeah, sure. You need 10, you need 5, we'll build 5, 10, 1, whatever.
Yeah.
That's fine, because that is our bread and butter. That is what we do. But a lot of times, like we said earlier in this conversation, we have 2 or 3 big accounts and they need wire harnesses and they need box build and they need testing. And it's like, yeah, we're going to do all those things for them because we get $1 million a year from them.
That becomes a customer service thing at that point, right? I mean, you're like, yeah, keep the customer satisfied.
Exactly.
You know?
It's just servicing a greater cause. You got it.
Do you guys need a BMW? How about pizza for your whole staff?
Absolutely. But yeah, so, it's so funny that you even mentioned that, because we've been talking internally about how, like, yeah, we really got to update our website. We don't want to tell people we do cable harnesses and box builds and stuff. We just want to do circuit boards. But yeah, it hasn't been updated in a long time.
And that's an interesting thing for young engineers as well, is that, like, I think it's also important to understand certain CMs want certain types of business. Like, I think, you know, I don't think you're a salesperson, but at certain CMs that I've talked to in the past, the salespeople will say, yeah, we do everything. And then the answer is, well, the price is going to be for the cable is going to be a lot different than whatever they want to be doing, you know, and then, like, you got to go to a cable manufacturer. But, like, again, as a young engineer, I didn't know any of these things. I'm just like, I'll just send out my quotes, see what happens. And it's like, everything's so expensive. Why?
It's crazy.
It's because you're not going to the right people, right? You're not going to the... You do have to kind of split up your work and know
it's part
these
of not going to the right people. It's part of tough. Exactly like you said, it's partly not going to the right people, but it's partly like you're just in a weird place. Like, you only need 15 of that. It's really tough to hire somebody to make 15 of that. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And you're willing to pay for it for a circuit board because it's hard to make a circuit board. But a lot of times, depending on the wire harness, you could probably bang that out yourself. Like, it may be, honestly, it's super valuable to make stuff yourself initially. Like, our best customers, are people who have actually made a few prototypes on their own, because then they're like, oh yeah, that 0603 footprint was horrible. I need to fix that, you know, before we get stuck with it and we go, hey, by the way, we're spending hours fixing all these things because your footprint was horrible.
Oh, you meant actually like in the layout itself.
Yeah,
it was bad.
In the layout. Footprint. Exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, so we're, you know, I'm using this whole idea of like all these other things being, important, because it segues into what really changed Worthington Assembly. And if you don't mind me talking about Circuit Hub and that partnership.
Well, but I don't. First, before you do, I will make a callback way back when Andy Seddon was on the Amp Hour.
Exactly. He's been on, and oh my God, how things have changed. So I think I have Chris Gamble to thank for connecting us. I think I was
wondering about that. I remember a conversation. I think I was talking to you in a parking lot when it was pouring rain in Cleveland.
No, it wasn't me. No, I wasn't in Cleveland. I've been in Cleveland once in my life and I was 21 years old.
No. I was on the phone. I was on the phone doing
probably.
This. Right. And I think I was talking to you and I don't remember why. I think Andrew might have asked for an intro, or you asked for an intro or something, but
Andrew probably asked for an intro. And then he called me. And at first I was sort of like, yeah, that sounds cool. Like, I agree. We should, you know, that kind of thing needs to be done, and I would love to do it. And but because here's the thing, you get people calling us all the time being like, yeah, I got this great new thing, and it, you just get jaded, right? It's just like eventually you're just like, sure. Yeah, it's
you're like, I got work to do, I gotta go.
That's the great that's the next great new thing. Okay, you like you totally get jaded from hearing all these things. But Andrew like had a legitimate pitch. He was like, this is what I think we need to do, and I was like, yes, absolutely, that must exist. And if you're going to do it, we'd love to be a part of it. But I never thought it was going to go anywhere. And then one day he called us and he's like, yeah, I got my flights booked and just want to make sure I got the address right. I'll see you guys on Tuesday. We're like, oh, yeah, sure. yeah, come on out. And at first we're all like, this guy's just going to show up. And like I got crap to do, man. Like, I can't just be like hanging out with him, like talking about stuff. Like, we got to get work done. But, you know, it was hard at first to believe. It's hard at first to take a lot of people seriously, because like I said, you get jaded over time. But he was totally right. Legitimate. And should I explain a little bit about what Circuit Hub is? Is your audience familiar with it?
That would be great. Yeah.
So
that was like 7 years ago.
That almost, was five, probably. So our partnership ago. With them, I think, began in 2013, 2014, something like that. So yeah, about that long ago. But basically what they did is they said, yeah, you know, the 2 weeks it takes to get that quote, like Chris doesn't care that it takes 2 weeks for his CM to quote him. He just wants his circuit boards. Circuit Hub said, well, we have figured out a way to get that done immediately, right? Like, just that's a problem a computer can solve. We shouldn't have humans in the way of that. And he did. I mean, it was just freaking like, he showed it to us. He showed us a demo and we were both like, oh crap. we're sort of thinking like, we, it's just that sort of moment. Like, I imagine, a lot of people experienced when they first saw, you know, a car or something. They're like, you know, say you're a furrier or something, and you're or a furrier. What's a horse guy? I forget what they're called. Let's say farrier.
Yeah, furrier is someone who dresses people in furs.
Maybe, I don't know. A guy who works on horses. Say you're a guy who works on horses for a living.
I see where you're going with this. Yeah. How about a blacksmith?
Let's just say blacksmith. You see a car for the first time, you're like, oh, crap. I'm in trouble. Right. And that's sort of how we felt with...
Yeah, but you might also say, I'm going to go make some wheels.
Exactly.
Instead, you know?
Exactly. So we saw what Circuit Hub was doing with their quoting, and we're thinking like, oh, my God, we spend hours doing this and this computer is doing it instantly.
Yeah. Well, okay, so quickly explain that. So explain the way things were and for quoting. Yeah. Because that's another big, like you said, it's a big piece and it was 2 weeks before. Yeah. So what was happening when you guys were doing
so,
that?
So we would tell you like, hey, how do you pronounce it? KiCad or KiCad?
Oh, touchy subject, man.
I know, that's why.
I think this interview is over, Chris. I'm sorry. We got to go.
That's why I said it.
So,
say you're using your EDA tool of choice, and you're used to your docs, right? You've got your PCB doc and your schematic doc, and then you say, hey, I need to get this board built. And you're like, sure, send us the Gerbers, the BOM, and the XY. And you're like, yeah, no problem. And you hang up and you go, What is Gerber's X, Y, and like, what are these things, right? You have to learn.
Yeah, well, I'm numb to that stuff.
You have to learn what those things are, right? You have to, have to learn how to export them, and you have to learn how to sanity check them, because you could have bugs in your exporter. And
oh, even worse when you start messing with your own BOM, right?
Totally.
If you're using the bill of material as a control document versus a schematic.
Yeah, totally.
At the touch point of mine.
Absolutely. So then you would send that to us, and then we would take your BOM and we'd go to all our vendors, you know, electronically, and we would say, okay, how expensive are all these parts? And, you know, we'd ask you, okay, you want 100? All right, great. What color circuit board? What kind of silk screen? What kind of copper weight? You know, what, you know, all this kind of stuff. Excuse me. And
yeah, so it's the standard process of going out and just getting quotes, right? So you're saying by email. And the thing that I think of is just spreadsheets. That's what's crazy to me, is like everything with spreadsheets.
Yes.
You send it off to four different distributors. Mm-hmm. They're all getting spreadsheets. They send it back. Mm-hmm. You then say, oh, well, the best prices for components 1 through 10 are from distributor A, and 11 through 20 are from distributor B, and then you actually split them out too. That's another crazy thing. Like, this is
we will, I mean, especially if there's cost savings, you split them out. But if like if like you're only going to spend an extra $100, you probably just all buy it from one source, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, just because it's so much easier. So that's how it was always done. And it would take us, you know, we'd have a queue and there's, you know, there's only so much a guy can get done in a day. Right. And so just, you keep putting everything on top of the queue and eventually you, as they trickle to the bottom, you send out your quotes. And that's still how, I mean, a lot of this stuff works. Right. But Circuit Hub said, yeah, Gerber files, whatever. That's not important. We just want your native EDA files. And, so just upload those native EDA files. We'll do all the rest. We'll figure out all the pricing. We'll figure out how expensive the boards are, how much the assembly is. Now you got to think about like how exactly do you solve that? Because, you know, 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, how do you get pricing automatically for all the components? Well, you have to have some kind of electronic API that goes out and does all that. Well, the timing was right, because you had companies like Octopart starting. They gave you an API mm-hmm. to be able to determine how expensive all the parts are and where they were and whether they were in stock.
Yeah, it didn't matter though. Like, so and I guess this is another question about like the mode of it. It's like that was meant for relatively low run still.
Yes,
right?
And it, I mean, what's relative?
But well, I mean, there's limits. I mean, there's just limits. Yes, of course. But I'm just saying that like, if you wanted to get like special pricing, which is what a lot of the old school style methods are based on, it's like, oh, I need a discount on, you know, this TI part because I'm buying 100,000 of them. Like, that's still different.
That still happens all the time. That still happens all the time. So yeah, we're talking lower volume stuff. We're talking when you need your prototypes or your short runs, or, you know, you only need 100 pieces or whatever or less. But yeah, you still get that. Like, we'll still have customers that will send us material because they said, hey, we got special pricing and we had to buy a full reel, but we only need 10 built. Here's our full reel. You know what I mean? Can you hang on to that for us or something? And we go, no, please, God.
Right.
We don't want to manage your inventory. But yeah, you have to do that kind of stuff. So, so they figured out like, okay, here's how we quote parts instantly. And that's the key, right? Because Chris wants his boards tomorrow. He doesn't want his boards in 3 weeks.
Chris is delusional if he wants that, but he still wants
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody wants it, right?
Yeah. So it's just about squeezing. It's just another efficiency.
It's efficiency.
Because you've already made the line efficient.
Exactly.
Now you have to make
make everything else efficient, right? So then you got to figure out how to price your circuit boards. Well, the only way to do that is to just, you know, basically take a gamble. Like, okay, I think circuit boards are going to cost this much. And so you have your computer automatically calculate the cost of those circuit boards. And then over time, after you've ordered, you know, hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of circuit boards, you build a computer model that says, yeah, this is how much circuit boards cost. And you can pretty much immediately know how much these boards are going to cost now because you've built this enormous database of things. But that takes time. Right. Initially, Circuit Hub was just like, finger in the air. I think they're about this much, you know, and then the assembly side was absolutely the hardest part. Right. It was like, how the heck do we figure out the cost to assemble stuff? And that's what we.
And so how the heck do you?
Well, that's why you needed to have Andrew come visit Worthington Assembly. We had to sit down and we had to figure out how are we going to build this automatic assembling quoting thing, you know, like. How can he get a reasonably close number using his computer that matches how much we're going to bill him, right? And I can't get into the details of exactly how we worked that out, but we worked it out. And that was like the key thing, right? That was the key thing that made Circuit Hub work. Made it work for customers, obviously, just like thousands of hours of engineering made Circuit Hub work. But, you know, without that sort of partnership, it would have made it really, really difficult for Circuit Hub to exist and to get accurate pricing. But now, so Chris needs a circuit board tomorrow. He can't get it tomorrow, but he can get it in 3 days, right? So literally from the time you're done designing, you can have a board in your hand in 3 days. Now, that's not possible with a traditional CM because they can't turn a quote in an hour. You know what I mean? It's just unreasonable. Now, I know your listeners are going to say, well, I know one guy who turned a quote in an hour, and it's like, well, yeah, but he can't do that for everybody. Right. Like it's
Right. Exactly. And if the word got out that that person was that good, then
he'd take over the world.
Is going to increase to the amount. Well, I just mean that their business is going to increase to the point where it's no longer, that's no.
Yeah,
longer
exactly. Business. Eventually that queue is going to get so big and he can't hire and train people fast enough to fulfill that queue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, so that was super cool. And I mean,
so is this a solved problem now though? I mean, like that doesn't still seem like it, this seems like it took another, you know, it improved. It's a process improvement, but it's not like it didn't solve everything, right? I mean,
no. Like, I mean, we're engineers. We can never use absolutes, can we? No. So it didn't solve everything. No. It's you're always working on it, improving things, but like the quoting system, it's solid. I mean, and people use it all the time. We get orders all the time. You know, I can't say to numbers because I'd be betraying, you know, important information, but we get lots of orders every day for thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
And so how does that change then? So how does that change the CM side of things then? So, okay. So now you have this new pipe of orders, right? You don't have to talk to people on the phone because obviously you do not like that. I found
phones
out.
Are awful. Yeah, phones are the devil.
Yes, yep. No phones. I'm sorry that we're talking right now.
Oh God. No, this is a microphone. It's okay because it has micro
right,
in it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
VoIP. so then how does it change, right? So does that allow you to then change that efficiency, like that to do that pit crew kind of thing, like you talked about?
Absolutely. So you know, I can't get into a lot of specifics, but I can give some examples like of how. So now you've got your. Our customers have given us all this data, right? You've given us your PCB, you've given us your schematic. Now we have a computer that has normalized all this data and can do awesome stuff with it and can export things in exactly the format we need it to be exported in, right? So we're not scrubbing Chris Gammel's information and Dave Jones' information and John Doe's information. All the information is being pre-scrubbed by Circuit Hub, right? We don't have to, you know, open it in a spreadsheet and delete this and trim that and, you know, make it all line up to exactly the way we need it for our machines.
Standardization, you're saying?
Standardization. It's all being done by a computer, right? So that's one example. That's one example of further efficiencies on our end that Circuit Hub gives us, not just the customer facing side of things, right?
Can you explain why that was necessary before though? Like what? So you're just taking headers off and is this because you're then sending the quotes out again or what?
Oh, no, for like programming machines, right? So you've given us XY data.
Okay.
Right? You've given us XY data, but the XY data might be in inches or it might be in millimeters or it might be in thousandths or it might be, you know, and it's like, well, all right, we got to translate all this. And, you know, you build macros and you build software and you build all these things to do some of the heavy lifting for you. But at the end of the day, you got to deal with mistakes. You know, you're like, hey, your BOM says that there should be an R3, but your XY has no R3. Can you tell us what's going on there? You know, that all is eliminated with Circuit Hub because everything matches. Okay. It's all being done right from your data, you know?
So just the pre-scrub. Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So just cleaned really up data sources. Yeah.
Cleaned up data. But then, you know, not just cleaned up data sources, like so many other things beyond that. Just think about the fact that now you've got all this data and you've got computers churning on it. You can really do some awesome stuff with it. And you can just really eliminate whole steps from your process because people used to have to do, and now we don't have to do it anymore. You know,
is this things like, I know you said there's some of the stuff sensitive, but like, is this like jelly bean component? Like, so jelly bean components would be one thing I think of. So if I order a board.
You mean like R's and C's? Jelly, like resistors and capacitors. Okay. I've never heard jelly bean components before.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Jelly bean. Yeah, cool. Jelly bean op amps, jelly bean resistors. Yeah. Anything that's like, that's, you know, a common brand or, you know, like a, you know, TL-072 or, you know, just standard 0603 10K.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. That kind of thing where there's, you know, 14 vendors for it.
Yeah.
So does that mean now that Worthington now understands from like a higher level analytical perspective of like saying, oh, well, we just got 20 orders in today. A bunch of them have components that are like 18 of them have 10K resistors on them. We can now bulk order all that stuff and split it out. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Or
so you could. I don't think I'm betraying too much to say we aren't. But now we have the ability to, right? It just depends on getting a software engineer to like, hey, this is what we want to do. Now sit down and figure it out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because all the data is there now. We can make that happen. Right. But yeah, that's one example. But like I said, there's other things that we do internally. Like I gave you the example of like, we don't have to scrub the XY anymore. The XY just comes to us exactly the way we need it. We can just import it right into our machines. Uh-huh. We don't have to like, you know, do any little processes. And yeah, that little process maybe only took 10 minutes, but 10 minutes times, you know, 500 different orders, that adds up to a lot of time. Right.
Sure, sure, sure. And actually, that's a good point too, because another thing that I didn't quite realize, a lot of pick and place machines, at least the ones that I've seen, they're kind of standing on their own. It feels like they need glue on the software side as well.
Yes.
So like if I go now, I've been working on a Neoden, so it's kind of its own
sweet
beast of. Well, it's its
own. Do
you
have the open source software running on it and everything?
No. I'm running the native stuff.
That is something anybody who's working on the OpenPNP, I would love to talk. I think that is like a super cool project. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here, actually. I'd like to talk to them.
Yeah. I think it's cool because I'm sick and tired of paying $1,000 for a feeder when I can just 3D print one.
Oh. Well, yeah. I don't think it's going to be at the same pedigree of what you're used to. But
no.
Yeah.
No, but there's a place for it, right? I mean, there's totally a place for it. Maybe not for Worthington Assembly, but maybe, you know, I mean, I just think it's super cool. I just think it's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I digress. The thing I was thinking about though was like you load in XY coordinates like you're talking about.
Yeah.
And but then there's also other things in there where it's like, oh, this is a new type of component. You need like component libraries for each type of pick and place as well.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have like calibration of, you know, it's a robot at the end of the day. So it needs to have calibration around component types and all the other things that are in there.
Absolutely.
And so if you now, so I imagine if you get a file from, you know, some new part that you haven't seen before, now that actually hits your machine and it's like, I don't know what that is. And there, that just puts a kink in the process. It feels
Yes, it totally does. Yeah. And that's still a manual process because it still requires you looking up a data sheet and determining what size that component is and all that kind of stuff. We haven't solved that particular problem yet. But you know, you'd be surprised. There's things in receiving that you can eliminate because a computer can handle stuff for you. There's things in shipping you can eliminate. There's things in just clerical, like putting the order up, right? Like putting the order on the schedule. It's just so many different things that they're all just, maybe it only took 30 seconds, but now you don't have to do it anymore. You know what I mean? When you're talking about
just efficiencies,
It's just all these tiny little things. They just add up to huge efficiencies. Totally. Yeah.
So what's the next step then? Like, what is the next like step function for CMs then? Like, what's gonna make it so that I don't ever have to talk to a human again?
I'll tell you what, I would say easily 80% of the orders that come through CircuitHub, we never talk to anybody. Like, we never talk to the
really?
Customer.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Totally.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
What about on the testing side of things? Does that change stuff too?
Testing is hard. Testing is hard. Testing is
I agree.
Testing is hard. It's I mean, in theory, you've got the schematic now and you could really do some cool stuff there, but you're gonna have to throw a lot of engineering at that to figure that out. But yeah, right now
I mean, if there was like a way to just mark voltages or something like that, but again, at that point, like, you might need firmware on board, you might need a bunch of other stuff that's in there.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of that.
Or no?
Yeah, we do a little bit of that. You like, if you order enough, then it makes sense to do programming. A lot of times it doesn't make sense to do programming if it's just, you know, maybe 50 boards. It just doesn't really make sense. But if you're saying, yeah, we've got 500 boards, it probably makes sense to do that because now we can automate it, right? And again, it always goes back to automation. And now we can.
Yeah, I mean, best case scenario is when you get a part that's pre-programmed. I mean, those are the. That's really the best way to do it.
That's what we're talking about is pre-programming the chip and then soldering.
Oh,
that
I
to
meant
the
from
board.
The vendor even like, you know, some of the vendors do pre-program. You can just like if you go to like Microchip Direct, you can get a pre-programmed part.
That's what I'm talking about too. Yeah. And you know, what's funny is a dirty little secret. There's basically one shop in the country that does that for everybody.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
They all outsource it to this one shop that we use too. We'll learn that real quick. I think there's a couple, but there's one kind of dominant shop. that does a lot of it. I'm sure, but I have seen at DigiKey, like I've seen the programmers and I've seen people, you know, loading reels onto the programming machines, and then, you know, those are getting loaded into tape and reel machines. So it is happening at the vendors, but a lot of companies are outsourcing it to the same shop. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
There's so many weird things like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that you pointed out was the smallness of the industry. Even though it's a big industry, it's like there are certain providers that are doing certain things.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy that they're, I mean, so I guess a CM is kind of a more general category, right?
Yeah.
But if you need something very specific, usually there's only a couple providers.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you could give, for example, conformal coding. There's not a lot of like dedicated conformal coding shops.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So like a lot of CMs have their own, like, so we'll have our own service for providing conformal coding, but like, you know, if you needed a ton.
I was
going to
say, it's usually just me with a spray can, you know, just.
What do you think we're doing?
Yeah, right, right.
Hopefully a little bit more controlled process, a little bit more,
right. Yeah, right.
You know, getting it even and consistent. But yeah, if you need to do like thousands of them, there's not a lot of shops that can do like thousands and thousands and thousands of you know, conformal coding, and then to do the automation to inspect conformal coding. And, you know, unless the CM has it themselves, if you're going to outsource it, there's not a lot of shops that are dedicated to doing just that.
You mentioned inspection. I mean, is that been changed as well by these, you know, in the automation, the world of automation?
Well,
that,
I'm glad you asked, Mr. Gammel. as a matter of fact, yeah, there's been kind of a game changer. So I worked at an AOI company, an automated optical inspection company, when I got out of college. And now back then it was kind of like a 2D inspection. So you'd have a camera that looked at the finished circuit board, and it would take a picture of it, and then it would use software to compare those pictures against other things that you've taught the machine to look for. And
whenever I hear fancy software engineers talking about machine learning, that's what I think about, even though it's like I've seen it on machines for years and years.
It ain't
years
machine
years.
Learning. I mean, it is like it's super rudimentary.
I know, but that's what that's what I think of. Actually, but I think about like machine learning, it's like usually that's what they're actually talking about, is like the AOI type stuff.
Yeah, we're not it's not the robot that's taking over the world just yet.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But yeah,
is this picture a square?
Right. Yes, no. Yeah. But what they're doing with AOI now is rather than a 2D image, a flat image, they're able to measure a third dimension, right? So they're able to measure the height of everything and then overlay the 2D image onto that height. And then it looks like you have this really freaking cool, three-dimensional like circuit board that you could hold in your hand. It's honestly like unbelievable. You're measuring the height of things at 7 microns. Like,
whoa,
that's the resolution of these things is 7 microns. So
awesome.
You're able to measure the 008004 chips.
I actually didn't even know those were chips. So now
please forget you even knew about them.
Oh man.
Not interested.
Yeah.
It gives you heartburn. Imagine trying to assemble things with that.
Yeah. Right. Right. No, I
so,
know.
So yeah, now they have these 3D AOIs, and we are super interested in that technology, and we will be, if anybody's going to Chicago, I'm hoping to be there next week, October, I don't know, what is that? You can never have a calendar in front of you when you need it, 16th and 17th to go to the SMT AI show out there. I happen to know
at
somebody
Rosemont.
Who lives. Yeah, I happen to know somebody who lives in Chicago. If he feels like joining, but he may have a full time job.
He sort of. Yeah.
Yeah. So going to look at 3D AOI. I think that's super cool. That technology is kind of changing the way that inspection is done, because inspection largely is still done by people. Fallible.
Right.
People,
so they look at like, they're like, oh, well, R13 is always, it always tombstones or something. They always just look at that. But a machine will look at everything, right?
And a machine will look at everything. Yep.
Yeah.
And you'd be kind of amazed at what people can catch, though. It's like, sometimes the girls will show me stuff and I'm like, how did you see that? Like, I never would have noticed that.
Humans are meant to be pattern matchers, right? And it's like, if anything looks out of, you know, out of ordinary, then you're, yeah, you catch it.
It's so true. It's so true. It's unbelievable. But like, so like the people we have in inspection are like unbelievable. They're like rock stars. But like, can we get a machine to do a lot more of that work, and we can open up those rock stars to do other things? Because like, right. we'd love yeah. to have them doing some of these like more value added, more difficult things. And, you know, right now they're just staring at circuit boards. Right.
Right. Exactly.
So,
yep.
so that's really interesting from our perspective, and something we're super interested in. And if a CM is listening to this, they're probably like, oh my God, Chris, we've had that for 3 years. Are you finally getting around to it?
Right. Well, I mean, that's another thing though. Like CMs are not, you know, I don't know about your specific business, but I've never looked at a CM and been like, oh, there's a high margin business. You know,
no.
It seems like it's better than being a distributor. But it's
a high margin
but it's not
business.
Like, right. I mean, so it's not like you have like cash flowing like crazy to do that next capital investment. That's what I'm saying.
No.
You know?
No. But you gotta price yourself right so that you can, you know? And
right,
so
right.
like honestly, when customers start to beat us up on price, we're like, yeah, I hope you find somebody who's willing to do it for less. Like it's just because yeah. we know our numbers, we know we need to make money, and we're just, you know, we're not interested in getting beat up on price. And that's never a right. good, like you never have a great relationship with a customer who's really price sensitive.
Right. Do you have any like high level, so like design tips for people that are listening that are like, so like how do I get my costs down? You
yes,
know what I, mean?
I absolutely do. Oh my God. I'm so glad you asked. I've been talking to another one of your guests, Zach and Spencer. From the public radio.
Oh, yep. We should. Yep.
So Zach,
both independently, we're on the show now. Yeah,
I know. And I love their interviews. They just loved it. Another great interview for your listeners. If they never listened to it with Ben Einstein, that was just a fantastic interview. Ben's like a wicked smart guy. And you know,
I was hoping you'd say wicked.
Yeah.
As,
oh yeah, man.
You know,
yeah.
Living in the, you know, Northeast.
You got to say it. You got to fit in, right? I don't.
Can you say a little bit more, like a little bit more like
wicked awesome.
Fast into
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Now I grew up in Jersey, so I don't exactly have yeah. the accent.
You just picked up the lingo, but not the accent.
I picked yeah. up the wicked, but I'm still a Giants fan. I can't be a Pats fan. So for
oh,
whatever
okay.
that is.
Well,
So anyway, the, yeah. So like I've been talking to Zach and he's over at Kickstarter and I've been telling him like, I'm like, there's so many things I want to tell customers, but I don't have the time to tell them. He's like, well, you should write a book and, you know, maybe raise money for it on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, maybe I should. I've been writing so much stuff down, but I'm like, this is going to make a crappy book. I don't know. We'll see.
Mm.
Stay tuned.
So how about a preview here?
But a preview. So like, silkscreen matters. It matters. Like, take your time with
matters.
It matters. Like, it really, really
it matters.
Matters
for what, though?
Because people are building your circuit boards. Right? Oh. Keep in
I
mind.
You just spent an hour telling me the robots are building my circuit boards.
They totally are. But what happens is robots are being programmed by machines. Or the meat, the machines
the meat,
are being programmed
machines.
By the meat. And,
yeah.
and, so, but so we are having to figure out how all this stuff goes together
yeah.
so that they can build
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And if we
yep.
can't tell what polarity your LED is supposed to be, we're, you know, yeah. we're going to spend a ton of time trying to figure that stuff out. And then we're going to, I'll give you an example, a potential guest, if he's been on your show, Joel Murphy, if he hasn't been on your show, you've got to get this guy on your show. He makes these like incredible devices that attach to your head and then you can like control computers with your brain and it's freaking amazing. It's all open source and oh my God, it's super cool. Anyway, so right now I've got 600 boards to build for Joel, but he switched a ceramic cap to a tantalum cap and I can't get a hold of the guy to figure out what direction to put this thing on the board.
It'd be really crazy if he was listening to this and
I
then
hope
that
so.
Actually got him to call you.
I hope so. Yeah. I DM'd yeah. him. I emailed him. I called him, left him a voicemail, sent him a text message. I hope
yeah.
he's like climbing Mount Everest or something. But anyway.
I'm sure he is. Yeah.
So, but like if he had silkscreen that said, you know, this is the anode.
Yeah.
Done.
Right.
He'd have the board sitting in his shop right now as we speak. So silkscreen matters. It really, really matters.
What about broader things about like components on one side, right? I used to have an engineer
yes.
I worked with who was like, yeah, if we only put components on one side, it would be half as much. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think so.
It would be, you would get it.
Be less.
You'd get it twice as
fast. I know
it would
be less.
You'd get it twice as fast. And it could be maybe not half as much, but a significantly less expensive. Yeah. it matters, because at the end of the day, you're building two circuit boards, right? You really are. You're building two circuit boards. What you're amortizing is your pick and play setup. You're amortizing your receiving. You're amortizing your quoting. And you're amortizing your shipping. Everything else is two circuit boards. So it is a significant percentage, right? So yeah, if you can get it all to fit on one side, that's huge. Speaking of double-sided circuit boards, my number one pet peeve, number one, are you ready for this? You ready for this? Put your heavy components on one side.
The top side.
Oh my God. I don't care if you call it the top or the bottom, but put them all on the same side, because, and especially like if you have, so we have one job we build pretty regularly that has this tellet module on it. It's like a,
cellular.
And it says can only experience one reflow. Right. And so he puts it on the bottom side of the board with all his other chips. And then he puts all his big inductors and aluminum capacitors and all these other heavy things that are going to fall off during secondary reflow. And so we got to glue all those things down so they don't fall off.
I always think about that when I see the glue layer on KiCad. I always think about like, oh, yeah, I remember, you know, it used to be the glue layers were more common as parts were heavier, right? 1206 components
they don't
more
fall
likely
off.
They don't fall off. When they were big caps or whatever. Anyways, I used to work with glue layers and not a big fan, but
don't.
It sucks when you have to use glue.
Don't bother with glue layers, but just tell, you know, just be mindful of the fact that if you're going to hang something heavy upside down, you're going to, somebody's going to have to glue that, you know, you're going to have to program a machine to spit out all the dots and you're going to have to make sure the volume's right. And we still might drop them because we didn't put enough down or it was crooked. And so it didn't have enough of a hold on it or, you know, all kinds of stuff goes wrong. Yeah, totally.
Right. And either way, it's going to be more expensive. So that's another thing.
Don't use online repositories of footprints. But use them. Go ahead and use them, but verify them. You know what I mean?
Trust but verify.
Like there is an 0402 footprint in the Eagle Library that haunts me. It haunts me. Because everybody uses it, and we get tons of tombstones and head and pillows because of it. It's awful. So it was so bad. It got so bad to a point that I finally just wrote an article. I designed an 0402 footprint. I had somebody make one for me on Twitter. I was like, hey, can somebody actually like make this 0402 footprint library for me so I can give it to people? And then every time we got a bad footprint, I would just send them that article because I was like, please fix your 0402 footprint.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what about sizes of components? So like, does that affect cost at all?
It does. Totally.
So which direction though?
Yeah. So if you can stay in the middle, that's the best, right? So like, 0402s are super easy, but 0603s are even easier. Right. And that does matter because at the end of the day, remember what'd you call them? The meat machines. People are building these things and things get screwed up, right? Robots aren't perfect. And so you got to make a little tweak and a little nudge and a little, you know, there's just little things you got to do. If that component's a little bit larger, it's way easier to fix. It just makes everybody's life easier.
Yeah, less time on a microscope, all that kind of stuff.
Totally. Right? And, or, you know, we'll get the thing where like, you know, somebody will send us, somebody will send us like all these tiny little strips of parts, a supplier, you know, not consigned material, but like a supplier will send us all these tiny little strips. And it's like, well, guess what? We're going to place that by hand. And if it's an 0201, that's really going to suck. We have ways of picking from tiny strips, but you get my drift, like sizing your components. It really does matter. So, you know, if you've got, there's nothing more frustrating to me than when you've got a 12-inch by 10-inch circuit board and you've got a tiny little 4-pin micro CSP voltage regulator that could easily be an SO8 or something. You know what I mean? Like we sell this
could have had voltage 247. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. We sell this voltage regulator in SO8 and SOT23 and in this tiny little CSP. And it's like, you know, the engineer goes, well, I've already drawn the CSP package footprint. I may as well just use it on this design. It's like, oh God.
So you guys charge more for that though? I mean, like, is that something where, so if someone's listening and they're like, oh, well, is it cheaper to use the SO8 instead of the CSP?
Yes. The answer is yes. Do we realistically scrub things that closely? Probably not. But we're going to look at your how fine pitch everything is, and we're going to look at sort of like, you know, you're going to sort of sanity check
the
design.
It's assigning like a difficulty rating for each kind of component.
Maybe not each component, but we're going to look at your overall design, and if we're going to see some difficult stuff, we're like, okay, we're going to have to charge more for this assembly. Yeah.
Got it.
Because we're just taking greater risk. It may go totally fine. Stencil printing's fine. Pick and place is fine. Everything comes out fine. We don't have to touch a thing. It ships out the door and we just made greater margin. But we have risk. We have increased risk.
Sure.
And so you have to charge for that increased risk. Which the smaller the component, the more difficult it is to print solder paste, right? You can't use a jet printer. You got to use a stencil. And maybe you have to use a really expensive stencil because you have really tiny apertures. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's going to cost you more.
Yeah. Anything that's out, that is something that I kind of tell people when designing circuit boards. If you start going outside the norm, and it's tough when you don't know what the norm is, but when you start going outside the norm, that's usually when you really start to incur costs.
Ask a CM, you know? I mean, they're honestly.
But they can't call you, so.
But they can email me.
They can email. And you guys write articles and all that other stuff too. Yeah. So
not enough. Yeah. Oh my God. I wish I wrote more, but.
Yeah.
Writing that book.
Well, that's good. how can people email you? Because we probably should be wrapping up here. And sure. And you wanted to mention something else as well in case people want to email you about that.
Yeah. So email me. You can go to our website, which is worthingtonassembly.com, and you'll find my email address on there. But it's cdenney, C-D-E-N-N-E-Y, at worthingtonassembly.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter. I kind of am the only one that manages the Twitter account, which is W Assembly. A little bit easier to type than Worthington, just W Assembly. And I try to respond to everything we hear on there. Cool. Not super active with it, but I mean, I check it regularly. So you can reach out to us there. And we are hiring desperately. Like, please, if you're interested in working for, I think, a super cool company with great people.
So what kind of work? Is it software work or actually assembly work or what?
No, not software work. I mean, if you're a software engineer and you think you'd be interested in some of this stuff, by all means, reach out. Like, we're not opposed to hiring software engineers and we're probably going to get your hands dirty for a while.
I was going to say, put them to work with some honest work.
Absolutely. Huh? So see, I can totally see, like, it's my dream to hire like a great software engineer. This truly hire a great software engineer. Be like, you're not going to write software for a year. You're going to sit in our factory. Yeah, you're going to do this. You're going to do this. You're going to do this. You're going to learn this whole thing. Now you're going to write software because now you've got the experience.
That would actually be great.
Now you know what you're working on.
That's like an apprenticeship anyways, right? I mean, that's just like a good... God. And it sucks that first... I remember like I started in repair and I was like, oh, I hate this. I hate this. And then I learned everything about the product because you see it fail so many times.
Right. I did too. I started in test and repair. Totally.
Yeah.
So,
that's way to do it.
But like, we're literally just looking for, you know, just boots on the ground, so to speak, looking for people who are, willing to actually build stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. You don't necessarily need experience. If you have experience, it's awesome. That's a total bonus, but you don't necessarily need experience. We'll train you. But we have like, if you go to worthingtonassembly.com/join-us, we put together a pretty cool video with Circuit Hub. Some folks from Circuit Hub helped us put it together because they're awesome people. And it kind of talks about who we are and who we're trying to hire and why it's cool to work here. Like, would encourage anybody to please reach out to us. Obviously, we're in Massachusetts, so you might need to be willing to move to Massachusetts. It's a great place to live. I like it here.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on and talking about working at CM, working in the industry. And I think we'll probably call you back when we have questions about that kind of stuff.
By all means.
And people can find you at this trade show this week as well. So
yeah,
keep
absolutely.
An eye out if you're at the SMTAI show in Rosemont.
Well, hopefully this gets published in time. Otherwise, it's going to sound pretty silly.
Oh, yeah. I think it will be.
Oh, so. Beautiful. But awesome. But yeah, seriously, this has been great. I love this industry. I love talking about it. I could talk about it for days, trust me. So by all means, if anybody's interested in just talking shop, we love it. So
yeah. 413-397-8260. That's the number on their website. So call them up. You'll get asked for Chris.
Yeah. That is the number on the website. You're willing. You are absolutely allowed to call it, but you may have trouble getting somebody on the phone.
That's right. Email first.
We'll pick up. But yeah, email me. Email me. I'm a prolific emailer. I will get back to you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks again, Chris. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great.